Trying to get by Benning. Darnell Nurse left it in the corner. Gets up center. Perry scores! Corey Perry!
Well, you're able to shake away from Solani. It's given away to Solani. Around in front. Score! Teemu Solani with the steal.
Three in the fans score one. Score! Off the floor! On the board! Paul Kariya!
All right. We are finally back with another episode of the Forever Mighty podcast. It's been a while. To be fair, we only missed one show.
We did technically
record a show. I guess it would have been on the weekend, last weekend. Steven and I recorded one, but the audio got completely butchered, so it didn't end up getting released. And then I fell asleep and missed recording our last show. But we're here. We're here. We chose the perfect game to come for it.
Ignore those two wins. Who gives a crap about that? Let's get to the blowout loss.
Hey, in the sense of the podcast here, we're still on a losing streak. Yeah. we haven't technically been here and released an audio version of the episode in a Ducks win. So we completely missed that 2-game losing streak. So we can treat this as a 10-game losing streak at this point.
10 games. It's more than 9 times. Ferris Bueller. 9 times.
Oh, man. But you know, in all honesty, that last game was still bad, but it was a lot more fun than this game was, right? The Ducks blew a couple leads in that game, ended up winning in overtime off a nice Trevor Zegras assist. This one was just not fun all the way throughout. Even though the only goal we got from Sam Steele was a bit of a jumbled mess, a shot from Delorier that kind of bounced off Steele's skate and the heel of his stick and into the back of the net. And it always stings a little bit more when you get kind of beat by a guy who hasn't made an NHL start in about 5 years. He comes in and has a 33 save performance and gets beat by an unlucky goal. Otherwise, he would have had a shutout.
Yeah, if it's not the Ducks giving up the first career goal to somebody, it's a dude who hasn't played in 5 years and just plays lights out and the Ducks have to lose to him. Never mind Gibson on the other end, all-star, franchise goaltender. We'll just get this guy from Canada real quick because Jonathan Quick's hurt and Peterson was crap, so we'll just throw him in there and see what sticks. And, hey, why not, it's just how we have to live life right now as Ducks fans.
Yeah, and we see Josh Manson and Troy Terry check out a lineup in this one. Both of them are injured.
Very specific injuries.
Yes, upper and lower body injuries.
Jeez. Just to show all your cards right there, Ducks. Gosh, you gotta save that information because they might be going to the playoffs and players might be targeting those upper and lower bodies of
these guys. Might be trade pieces. You don't want to give away too much about right. These injuries.
Yeah, heaven forbid, stubbed his toe.
Should just be injuries. No lower upper body. He's just hurt. He's hurt.
Yeah. He's sad today.
An indescribable hurt. But yeah, they both missed the lineup today. Josh Mahura draws in for Josh Manson. Essentially, he ends up playing with I think it was Kevin Shattenkirk, which was a bit of a new look, something we haven't seen too often this year. And then Vinny Leteri comes in for the injured Troy Terry, and Danton Heinen finds himself scratched again, which is still amazing to me. Which, you know, I get that apparently he's on the trade block and they're trying to move him, so I get you probably don't want the guy to get hurt or whatever if that's the case there, but other than that, there is absolutely no reason that Vinny Leteri should be getting in this lineup over a guy like Danton Heinen, especially when he was I don't want to say a big trade piece, but a guy you brought in for an asset in Nick Ritchie, who you look at what he's doing in Boston, he's doing a lot more than Danton Heinen's doing right now because he's not being given really the opportunity to show up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's got to be kind of the only reason, because if you're trying to win every game, you probably put him in that position. And if you're not trying to win and you're trying to maybe move assets around or prospects around, then you hold them back out, because I don't think Heinen's played anything short of what you maybe expected, if not maybe a little bit better than what you expected. So why he's sitting on the sidelines and you're giving a shot to somebody who hasn't played all season, I don't know. But we're not Bob Murray, I guess. We're stupid.
Oh, I could go with anybody other than Bob Murray at this point, but he's apparently working the phones pretty diligently because we got some more news today in the form of the TSN trade bait board, where Rickard Rakell debuted at number 3 on that list. And I guess the article really kind of focused on Rickard Rakell's addition to that list because of the week that he's had, or the 6-game stretch heading into tonight that he's had, where he had 5 goals and 7 assists for 12 points over that span, led all NHL players in scoring over the last 6 games by a decent margin. He had 12 points. I think the next closest was Mark Stone with 10 points. So, you know, this is the Rickard Rakell I guess you expect. Obviously, tonight ends up going pointless and kind of throws a wrench in some of our discussions there. But, you know, for good reason, the focus was on Rickard Rakell for that article. And it basically stated that Bob Murray is picking up the phone. He's listening to offers on Rickard Rakell. But as the article states, 2 GMs stated that the price on Rickard Rakell right now is very high. And yeah, as vague as that, it's just very high, which is understandable. I mean, the guy is on the hottest of hot streaks right now. And if you were to trade him at this point in time, you would expect his value to be higher than it was, you know, 6 or 7 games ago.
Yeah, and you got to take into account he's not a rental player. He's still got another year on that really nice contract. And the fact that what I've liked about Rakell's game lately, and I think it happened, you know, a few games after he kind of came to the realization that it was like, listen, I've been too wound up in trying to, I've got to produce, I've got to do this. You know, if I'm not doing this, then something's wrong and I gotta just overthink it. And I think there was a point there, you know, early on in the season after 10 or so games where I think he finally said, he was just like, I just kind of stopped worrying about scoring goals and I just went back to having fun. And when he started doing that, and shortly thereafter, he started getting the chances. They didn't necessarily go in right away, but all of a sudden it was something we were all kind of waiting for, because we just see he's getting those chances. He's having fun doing it. And that's kind of where he's in his zone. And so he's been pretty much hitting that streak, you know, that stride, I guess, for the last few games, today being, you know, the clunker. But other than that, if you can find that dude in a good spot to produce the way he has been, even given, you know, putting on another team, he could probably fit in very well and be very appetizing for teams that maybe want that guy who can score, is not just a rental player, and on a very friendly contract come next season. So he's got a lot of value there.
Yeah, it's almost like the perfect storm right now to have almost max value for a player like Rickard Rakell, where, you know, a couple shows ago I mentioned a few guys who could be available at the deadline, guys like Taylor Hall, who, you know, name value-wise and history-wise are better players than Rickard Rakell are. But I would argue come deadline time, if you're looking at forwards who could command the most value or who provide the most value to a team, Rickard Rakell's got to be close to the top of that list, and I think even above a guy like Taylor Hall, because the only way for a team to really be interested in a player like Hall at the deadline, Buffalo is going to have to retain 50% of that $8 million contract to make it even stomachable for most teams. And even on top of that, he's a rental, right? With Rickard Rakell, he's now producing at the rate you expect of him. Obviously, he's been a streaky player in the past, but right now he's on close to a 60-point pace across an 82-game season. He's running hot right now. He fits into most teams' top 6, if not their top 9. And the big thing, like you'd mentioned, is that contract and that extra year. You know, most teams can fit that 3.7 that he makes into their books right now. And if you're the Ducks and you retain, you know, 25, even 50% of that, immediately the value skyrockets. I mean, imagine Rickard Rakell, 50% retained for a competitive team, and the value on that. And if you're the Ducks, 50% retained on Rickard Rakell's deal is just over $1.8 million for the next 2 years. If that increases what you get in return, you do that. And you know, imagine the value in a player like Rickard Rakell to a competitive team when he's only making, you know, $1.7 or $2 million, or, you know, or $1.9 million over the next couple of years. You know, the value from there skyrockets. So I think, you know, at the deadline, as much as I'd love this guy to stick around and be a part of the Ducks when they're a good team, because I think he would be a valuable player, you kind of have to move him. Like, the stars are aligning with everything going on right now that you're not really ever going to get much more than you're going to get for him right now. And this is the best time, if any, to move him.
Yeah, and the words from Bob Murray himself is he expected us to be in a completely different spot than we actually are, and he's disappointed in where they are. And so, I mean, he's at least got a few guys under decent contracts, or Kel being one of them, that, you know, there's such a high value. So when GM say, oh, he wants a lot, it's like, well, this is his major trading piece. I mean, he's got a guy that's probably not going to help this team necessarily. Like he could help a team right now if the team was good right now, but the team's not good and they're not going to be good for a little bit. And in a little bit, is Raquel still going to be that guy? And then after next season, he's going to need a new contract. It'll probably definitely upgraded over what he has right now, because he is such a low base on this one. So you almost got to move it while you can. And quite honestly, in this year, it's hard with a cap not really increasing or anything like that. They're looking more for monetary value and who they get. So the Ducks, I'm saying other teams are looking for monetary value in the trade they get. So that even makes Raquel even more of an asset for somebody to try and go out and get, maybe give up, you know, young prospects and even draft picks. So that kind of puts the Ducks in a good spot moving forward if they want to move Raquel. I don't want to see him move, but it is what it is. We are where we are. Tonight was another prime example where two wins forward, barely, and then a giant fall backwards. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody wants to move him, because, you know, immediately when he moves on to another team, you're going to miss, you know, what he brings to the lineup on a nightly basis, which is being one of the only reliable goal scorers or point producers that the Ducks have right now. You know, outside of him and Comtois, there's not much really going on with this team. And Comtois is going nowhere, but Rickard Rakell is at the kind of the top of that trade list, where if he goes, you're likely not getting a roster forward in return. And you probably don't want, you know, a hockey trade if you're trading Rickard Rakell, right? Like, you don't want to kind of make that move to bring in a roster player and have a Nick Ritchie, Danton Heinen type situation. It just doesn't make a lot of sense for the Ducks to really go out and explore that route. And when you look at, you know, the price being high right now, you'd have to imagine that it does revolve around picks, and it probably starts around what the Ducks got for Andre Kasha, or what Tyler Toffoli went for when the Kings traded him, or what Barkley Goodrow and Blake Coleman went for, which is a first round pick and at least a B plus level prospect. I think that's the minimum. And when you're looking at GMs around the league saying that the price is high, you would then have to think it's at least a first-round pick and a high-level prospect, if not more, right now. And I think he could command that. I think of all the things we said here, you know, his term, the amount of money he has left, you know, the production increased right now, his past production being a back-to-back 30-goal scorer, I think he has a lot of things going for him for the Ducks to be able to sit there and command whatever price they want. And I think eventually they'll find a desperate enough team with a deep enough prospect pool who will bite the bullet and make that deal. You know, for a lot of these teams, a first-round pick means nothing if you're trying to compete for a Stanley Cup. If you have a deep enough prospect pool, giving up one of your top three or four prospects doesn't hurt you that much in the long run. And then whatever else is included in the deal, you know, whether it's to bounce salary or whatever, it's something that you would be willing to move. So I think eventually there would be a team who's interested. It's just finding that one team, nailing down the assets and getting a deal done. So, you know, I don't know if it's going to happen. I think if anybody's going to be moved, Raquel's probably the most likely, just because the amount of teams who'd be interested in him. But it's going to take a lot of work to get this deal done.
Yeah. And then once again, any team that, you know, might be a little hesitant on giving up prospects or draft picks can always kind of fall back on the fact that it's not just for this year. It's like, yeah, hey, we have a prospect and, you know, he might be helping us in 3 years, but this guy can help us for this year and possibly next year. So that's where I think Raquel can command a little bit more than, say, your Taylor Halls and whoever else might, you know, be out there at that trade deadline. But we'll see, because Bob Murray is not going to give him up for nothing. I mean, at this point, he's got to salvage whatever reputation he might have left just to go, all right, I'm not going to fleece this last time with Raquel. So he's probably, you know, hey, you want him? I got to have a home run to talk about. So,
yeah, and DeBry Lowry brings up in the chat, I know you had mentioned, like a lot of people said, don't really want to see Ricard Raquel go anywhere. But if he did leave, where would you be okay seeing him go? You know, out of division, out east, you know, a specific team? Where are you fine with the Ducks trading Ricard Raquel if they had to?
I don't care. wherever he goes, I wish him nothing but luck. You know, obviously not against the Ducks, so, you know, out east would be great, you know, versus in division. But, I mean, everything's so crazy now with the divisions. After next year, if he goes to, like, a Colorado, or Colorado thinks he can really kind of capitalize on, you probably don't see too much of him. That being said, you know, no one wants to see him go. And I think that's kind of a testing to how good he is, or how nice he is and a fan favorite. And so it's like, if he goes somewhere else, I do nothing but wish him well. So I don't care where he goes. I hope he has a great career. If he's not with the Ducks, I wish it was with the Ducks, or continues to be with the Ducks. But it doesn't really matter to me if he goes somewhere and has success. Really, on any team, just not the Kings,
yeah. San Jose, and as long as that success is not
Vegas
coming back to hurt the Ducks, yeah, in the long run, right? Like, just if
out of division,
I doubt. I mean, you know, you have to think too. You know, any trades technically in division this year might not be in division next year, right? If he gets traded to Colorado this year, in division just for this year. Next year, when the divisions go back to normal, which we hope. The Ducks won't have to face him as much as they would this year. So there are those kind of concerns you have to take into play there. And one of the teams that Frank Seravalli mentioned when he was reporting this as well, that were interested in trying to take a run at Ricard Raquel, was the Flames. They actually tried before their coaching change, but the price was too high for them. Which, I mean, I don't know what the asking price would have been from Calgary. You know, you look at some of the young players and Dylan Dubé and Yusuf Alimaki and some of the prospects they have. You know, the Flames aren't really in a position to make that trade, I don't think. And you would think, you know, a first-round pick and one of those guys plus on top of that to bring in Ricard Raquel. And, you know, they might have been paying a premium as well because they're in division, you know, not this year, but for the long run. So for next year, they're in division with the Ducks and playing in the Pacific Division. So, you could almost think there could have been a premium on that deal to get that done as well. But, you know, that's arguably two or three general managers now who are saying the price is too high for Ricard Raquel. So, you know, credit to Bob Murray that he's at least sticking to his guns, right, for the time being. You know, we could see that change, you know, in tomorrow or in a week, and the Ducks end up taking what they can get for him. But at least for the time being, he's taking the calls. He's not hanging up on people. He's sticking to a price. And for a lot of teams, that's too high right now. But like we said before, all it takes is one team is willing to pay that price. And if you stick to it, eventually you're gonna handcuff somebody into doing it. And whether that comes on deadline day when all the big guns have gone and Taylor Hall's moved on and a lot of other guys have gone, and the last option you have, or the last good option you have, is Ricard Raquel, that only drives his price up no matter how he's playing. So, you know, we'll see what the deal ends up being. But I give Bob Murray a bit of credit here for at least sticking to his guns.
But what other option does he have? I'm not going to give him a ton of credit.
I'm not giving him a ton of credit.
I'm not going to give him a ton of credit. He's got his thumb up here, and he's just going to kind of keep pushing. And then once GMs go like, all right, I got to make a move. Okay, all right, we'll fine, whatever. We'll do what you say, and then that's what it is. So everyone says, oh, it's outrageous. It's really high right now. And then they go like, I got to go to my fans, I got to go to my owner and go like, why didn't we make a move? This guy is, you know, is got value. He could help the team. And especially right now, an odd season, maybe we can make a run at it, see what happens, you know, maybe get a championship that doesn't ever leave. So even if there's an asterisk on it. So Yeah, he's under no pressure. He's pretty much done after this year, so he's holding on to what he's got and just waiting for the right thing to at least set us up. At least not selling us down the river, so that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when you look back at the deals now and you look at the two, I guess, big deals he's made each year over the last 2 years, it's the Andre Kasha deal and the Brandon Montour trade. And, you know, it's too early to say if they panned out or not, but Andre Kasha, his deal ended up being a first-round pick, and Axel Anderson. So we're still waiting, of course, to see what kind of comes out of those as well. And then in the Brandon Montour deal, it was Brandon Gouley in a first-round pick, which turned into Braden Tracy. And Gouley right now is kind of dwindling away in the AHL, struggling to get back from injury. So we really haven't seen...
Tracy hasn't done anything, right? I don't think he has any points.
Tracy had 0 points in 12 games with the goals before he, just the other day, he got sent back down to Victoria and the WHL for the beginning of their season. So, you know, probably one of those guys that was just too early for him to make the step to professional hockey, a little bit different from what we've seen from Zegras and Drysdale. But, you know, when you look at return on investment for those trades and what you have Gouley and Tracy, and not like Brandon Montour has lit it up in Buffalo, but you're not seeing any immediate or close to immediate impact on the Ducks lineup from either of those. And the same goes for the Andre Kasha trade with the first round pick you got from that, and Axel Anderson, who's playing in Sweden right now. So if you're Bob Murray right now, and if you're Ducks fans, you're hoping that whatever return you get for a player like Rickard Rakell this year, you can at least see that impact, hopefully a little bit sooner. You know, obviously the first round pick is going to take some time to get there, but if you can get a top prospect in return in this trade, a bona fide top prospect that's near the top of their system, a guy that you have a little bit more faith in than, say, a Brendan Gouley or an Axel Anderson to actually be a competent NHL player who can contribute on a nightly basis in your lineup. That's what you're hoping for if you're a Ducks fan right now, whether it's Toronto or Carolina or Philadelphia or whoever that ends up being the trade partner. That's the hope, I think, that you would want to return as a player like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. Kasha was, in my opinion, a pretty easy trade to make. I mean, that guy's been so injury prone, and I was always worried about, oh, even though he shows signs of being good, he's got the concussion issues, and I think he's out right now with the concussion or something. I don't think he's playing with Boston. So yeah, I mean, do whatever you can and get what you can from Rakell, because at this point, the Ducks obviously have shown that they're not really in contention this year, and it doesn't look like it's going to be anytime soon. Maybe two seasons from now, hopefully. Who knows?
I think fans have been split on the idea, and I'll get your thoughts on this as well. Is, you know, there is some merit, I think, to keeping Rickard Rakell. He's not old. He's only 27. The Ducks rebuild is nowhere near close to being done. But, you know, to think he'll be 30, 31, maybe 32 when the Ducks are hopefully getting back to being competitive and back in the playoffs again, like at the very latest, you know, you would hope this rebuild is 4 to 5 years at the longest, 2 to 3 years on the short side. Rickard Rakell should feasibly still be a decent in the middle of his prime or to the end of his prime, where he's still producing at this level, right? Is it, in your opinion, better to keep him around for when the Ducks get to that point, or to trade him right now when his value is as high as it can, to maybe push this rebuild a little bit further along?
It's a loaded question.
It's tough, but it's what everybody's talking about right now is, you know, do you trade him for assets now, or do you keep him because he'll be a valuable and veteran piece to a young lineup in the future?
Here's what I would do under normal circumstances, and I'll clarify what I mean by normal circumstances. I would, unless the return was a haul, and I mean, you're not Taylor Hall, but I Hall, H-A-U-L. If you're getting a whole bunch back for him, then I would say under normal circumstances, all right, well, you gotta take it, even though he's on a good contract. He's struggled a couple of years. He's showing a little bit more signs of freeing up and kind of learning how to play in this NHL. Or I think he struggled the last couple of years trying to figure that out. The problem is that we're going to go through an expansion draft. We're going to go through a brand new GM. We're going to possibly lose our coach. at that point, when everything kind of just we're starting a new slate up and over, it that creates a lot of uncertainty for me. And if there's a lot of uncertainty next year or the following year, this guy's only under contract for the rest of this year, next year, and then he's going to need a new contract, and it's going to be more than what he's making now. He was on a team-friendly contract moving forward. So that's where I start getting into this problem where, like, well, as much as I'd love to keep him and I know what he could do, we're not under normal circumstances. We're going to go through big changes here in the next season or two just for all the reasons I laid out. And at that point, with all that uncertainty, you're really banking on the fact that this team is going to be competitive next year or the following year, and at what price point are you willing to put Raquel? Are you, how much are you willing to pay him, or how much you think he's going to ask? Or do you trade him now, get those assets, let the dust settle for a year or two and see where we're at 2 years from now, and we didn't lose him for nothing to free agency or whatever? Because I'd have a hard time thinking he'd want to try and re-sign with the Ducks after everything the Ducks have been doing. Yeah. it'd be rough, I would think, on his side to want to re-sign with us. And you'd either have to have supreme confidence that that was going to happen, and you'd also have to be the same GM. It makes more sense for me at this point to trade him, get assets and prospects, let this dust settle next year, and then figure out where we are a year and a half from now.
I think that's the one big thing to take into account here is I think a lot of people are just assuming that if we keep Ricard Raquel, that he would automatically re-sign with us as an unrestricted free agent at the end of his contract.
We're not a destination point anymore right now.
Yeah, I mean, yes, he's been a Duck for his entire career, but you know what at any point has indicated to us that he wants to be that type of player, that he wants to be a one-team player. I have no – and this is nothing against Ricard Raquel, not to say he's unloyal or whatever. I just have no confidence that he wants to be that guy, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, a lot of guys would not want to come back to this situation at the end of next season it hasn't changed, which I highly doubt it will. You know, hopefully there's some progress there, and we're seeing a slight bit of progress this year, but it's definitely a lot slower than I think management thought it would be. It's a lot slower than I think a lot of the fan base thought it would be. You know, it's a very hard sell to Ricard Raquel to bring him back, and I think the only way you're the Ducks, if you're still in a position like this next year, to bring him back is to overpay him. And to be the team that pays him the most and maybe gives him that extra year. And then you're right in the same boat you are with Henrik and Silfverberg right now with how unmovable their contracts are because of the term and value that are put on them right now. And that's the risk you run, I think, of keeping him. I know a lot of people in the chat said, you know, you should only move him if a team overpays for him or pays what you're looking for. I don't necessarily think the Ducks have the luxury to do that with a lot of these guys because Ricard Raquel's value is never going to be higher than it is now, this season, because he's got that extra year of a pretty sweet deal where you get him for this year as essentially a rental in terms of you only get him for about, you know, 15 to 20 games plus playoffs this year. And then you get a full season of him next year and first crack to sign him as an unrestricted free agent. There's a lot of value in that. And I don't see the benefit long term for the Ducks keeping him and trying to convince him to stick around and be here with this team. You need the assets more, I think, than the risk involved with that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. And then, like I said, we're not going to get a Getzlaf. I mean, Getzlaf and the loyalty of Getzlaf just wanting to be with one team, that's a very rare. Rare, not commodity, but rare personality. No, that's not it. What is it? Rare trait, I guess. I don't know. Someone that wants to actually stick with one team. That doesn't happen very often. Getzlaf might be one of those exceptions to it. And you're not going to maybe put him in as a grant where it's like, oh, we get him. Yeah, he's got value. We trade him. We get him back. That doesn't happen very often either. So, like, for my perspective of it is just I don't think unless this team is on the cusp of contending and then all of a sudden he has a little bit of pride that he helped bring this team to that point, that would be the only way I could see him maybe try to stick around at a normal price, or like you said, overpaid to stick around. And I don't think it's going to be Bob Murray's choice at that point. At that point, I don't think he's a GM anymore. So, you know, he's smart. He just gets rid of him and, you know, gets what he can for him when he can.
Yeah, and I think the difference with players like Getzlaff and Perry is they were the cornerstones of this franchise. Those are the guys that usually stick around for the long haul, and they, you know, become captains like Ryan Getzlaff and have more reasons to stick around longer in their career. And Getzlaff has won everything he could win at this time. But, you know, off the top of my head, I can't really think of many Ricard Raquel-type players, you know, middle six to top six forwards who stick around when the going gets tough. And that's nothing against Ricard Raquel. You know, I saw Operation mentioned in the chat about different times that he's shown his loyalty. And I think he's loyal and wants to be an Anaheim Duck. But at the end of the day, if this team isn't good, he's going to be 29 when he goes, or 29 the summer of re-signing that contract, becoming an unrestricted free agent. This is presumably his last deal. If he signs a 4 or 5 year contract, which is what I think he'll be aiming for, to a contract that takes him into 33, 34, 35, right?
Yeah.
At that point, why come back to Anaheim if there's no signs of being good? You know, you want, if a team's going to offer you that and you can get 3 or 4 good years at trying to win a Stanley Cup, I think he's going to take that, especially because he hasn't done it. As much as he loves the Ducks and loves living in Anaheim and loves the fans or whatever, at the end of the day,
Swedish connection, dude. There's so many Swedes there. He's got to stick around.
At the end of the day, it's about winning, though, right? Yeah. And unfortunately, it's like that for all these guys. And eventually, all these guys move on, and it's the older guys and the captains or whatever that stick around. But Ricard Raquel, I think, again, it's nothing against him. It just seems like a situation that if nothing is trending in the right direction here, the Ducks don't stand really a chance of re-signing him in free agency unless they overpay or give him an extra year or both. And they've shown to do that in the past, and I'm not sure I want another 5-year, $5.5 million contract on the books for a guy that's going to be 33 or 34 near the end of that deal. We've already got two of those.
Yeah, and I think he's been loyal enough in the fact that he signed the contract that he did at the time he did. And, you know, at some point he should be getting paid for what he could do, what he has done. I know Pat will argue on this one. You get paid for what you should, you know, what you have done or should do. But I mean, the dude's being paid under $4 million and we're getting him through what is now considered an NHL prime. He's shown real recently that he has that spark, and if on a good team, he can probably produce. So he's not going to sell himself short, you know, on that next last contract that he's going to have. So the loyalty may go out the window if it doesn't really, I wouldn't even call it loyalty. I would just say, it's like, listen, we had our shot. I signed low. I wanted to kind of, you know, be a part of this and see what we can do. You've gotten way more value out of me, or, you know, way more, you know, at least more value out of me than you're paying me for. And that was to hopefully create a contending team for a Stanley Cup. But you guys aren't there. You guys aren't going to pay me. And I'm not just going to go like, well, I really hope this team does well. I'm going to take another small contract and see if I win a Stanley Cup. I mean, no one goes into their NHL career hoping that they're going to be so loyal to a team that's not going to win a Stanley Cup. They'll take less money for what they can produce. So he's going
to
make
nobody wants to struggle through mediocrity for ever. Yeah. If you've never won at all.
Majority of your career, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think this is a question of loyalty with Ricard Raquel, because I think if the Ducks were good, he would be happy to stick around, right? And he has stuck around through the good, and he's been here through the bad so far. But it's just a crucial time in his career that he becomes an unrestricted free agent at 28, 29 years old, where you're right there, you know, you likely don't want to sign a 3-year deal to take you to your early 30s. You're looking probably for a 4 or 5 year deal is what he'll likely get at that point to push you into 34, 35. And then maybe after that, you sign a couple smaller deals to finish out your career. But this is the last big contract of Ricard Raquel's career. If the Ducks are still in the position they are, why would he want to return? For him as a person and as a player, I would not want him to come back. because it's not the best situation for him. You talked about before, where would you want him to go? Somewhere that he can succeed and do well. And if that means the Ducks get assets for him before that point, he goes off and does well somewhere else, great. Yeah, Operation made a point in the chat here. You know, you can really never have not have bad contracts on your roster. That doesn't mean to go out and just sign a bad contract, because you can never not have bad contracts. We already have plenty.
Yeah.
Ryan Kessler's deal is coming off in a bit. It's been on LTIR forever, so Getzlaff people forget about
comes
it.
Off,
but that's a bad contract. Yeah, Getzlaff comes off, but you still have Henrique's contract, which is a bad contract. You still have Silverberg's contract, which is pretty close to being a bad contract. And you've got Cam Fowler's contract, which I can argue is, again, pretty close to being a bad contract in terms of term and the value that he gets out of it. You know, is he a $6 million defender? I don't know. I don't think it's the worst contract ever. But I think for all three of those, you can at least make the argument that they aren't great contracts. And you've already got three of them for a long period of time here. The longest three contracts you have are those three guys. Why add Ricard Raquel to that mix on a $5 million plus contract for 4 or 5 years when he's 29? That's the thing.
Here's the best way to think about it that I can surmise is everyone likes Ricard Raquel. He's a very likable person. He can produce, for the team, help the team out. But if you love something, let it be free. Just let it go. Let it be beautiful somewhere else. Obviously, we cannot, as a franchise, make him as great as he can be. So why hold him back? Just love him and let him go. If it's meant to be, he'll come flying back.
Yeah, exactly.
At this point.
And just to wrap this up, I mentioned a few places that I think would be interesting fits for him. Obviously, Toronto is one because just of how much he'd fit into that top six over there. Carolina is another deep prospect pool, a team that could use another offensive weapon, a young team that would be able to kind of fit under the cap for the next 2 years. And then Colorado and Philadelphia were a couple others I threw in there. And the thing with all three of these teams is I think they have some high-level prospects they'd be willing to give up to get better this year and compete this year, because I think all four of them have a shot at winning a Stanley Cup. I think, you know, Toronto's one of the best teams in the league. I think Carolina surprised a lot of people being up there in the top five in the NHL this year. Colorado, obviously, with the weapons that they have, as long as they can keep Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar healthy. You know, they've been without both of them for a while here, and they just got MacKinnon back tonight in their overtime win, so Ricard Raquel would fit there too. And then the last one, and probably the most interesting fit for me, is the Philadelphia Flyers, because I think, you know, sending Ricard Raquel east is probably the best option for the Ducks in terms of not having to face him that much. And he fits nicely into that Philadelphia lineup. And the player you're getting in return, I always love these little stories here, but Cam York is the Philadelphia Flyers' top prospect, and he's an Anaheim Hills native. So it's written in the stars in destiny, their former junior Duck, Cam York, coming back to the Ducks organization. I don't know what Ricard Raquel is going to fetch. Those are a few ideas I had there. But I think if you're a Ducks fan, or if you're Bob Murray at this point, that's the type of return you're hoping for, as a top prospect and some picks in return.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, that's what you should be looking for. And you're not going to really look for a roster player that's going to make anything happen on this current team. And like I said, at this point, it's who's willing to pay what, who's willing to give up what. But it seems definitely like it's going to be a prospect, a draft pick, something in that order. And it's somewhat befitting for the Ducks and the current management to make a deal that brings in a local boy, your Chase DeLeo, your whoever's. That can come in and, all of a sudden, there's a story behind it. And if there's a story behind it, people will rally around that, especially around here. So
just saying, Nick Robinson and Cam York are both California natives. So it only makes sense.
It's in the stars, man.
As we know, Bob Murray will probably make a hockey deal, and we'll all be fairly disappointed. And that will be the direction.
Then we'll say bye, and then it'll be on the next whoever.
But we bounce from one trade rumor to another, because this is one that Steven and I discussed on the show where the audio got corrupted.
Oh, the lost episode.
The lost episode. But I think this discussion is perfect for you because it involves goaltenders and specifically John Gibson. It was a tweet in an article from last week that had mentioned that the Sabres had inquired about the availability of John Gibson in the offseason and earlier this year, and that they were told by the Ducks that they have no interest in moving him at this time. And that sparked, of course, a bunch of trade speculation. Obviously, the Sabres are looking to move Jack Eichel. They're also looking to make trades to keep Jack Eichel there and trying to bring in assets that make this team better. And I think if you're the Ducks, you know, one of the first places you should be looking to if you're looking to move John Gibson probably would be the Buffalo Sabres, just because of the plethora of options you have, the fact you move him completely out of conference and really don't have to face him that much. No, I don't think we're at the point where we're trading John Gibson, but if, you know, it's been coming up a decent amount this year for good reason. And I think if you were looking to move him somewhere, Buffalo is not the worst place you could move him. Maybe for him it is, but at least if you're looking at potential return, it's a pretty decent option for the Ducks.
Once again, you're giving up an A-class goaltender on a team-friendly contract. And it's like, you better, because we're a what's the word I'm looking for? We're a little spoiled in the fact that we got a John Gibson, and prior to that, we had Freddie was there for a little bit. We've had Jaguar for a while. The Ducks have usually had amazing goaltending, and I feel like they go like, well, if he's not in and we trade Gibson and we get something, we'll just have somebody else come in and do amazing. Ryan Miller's not going to be here next year. I mean, in my opinion, this is one and done. And he was hoping maybe there was a chance that they could get there, but he's just kind of one and done. Dostal is, although started good, is kind of faltered a little lately. So he's not exactly just ready to fall in line. So there is no starting goaltender. So whoever you give up, you are literally doing the Ducks, in my opinion, to mediocrity for at least the next couple of years until Dostal gets his feet wet in the NHL or the North American style. He's only played for a couple of months here, the NHL or the North American style of hockey. So to try and trade Gibson and think that you're going to get this great return, you are giving up the only strong suit I feel like we've had over the last couple of seasons, where offense has sputtered, defense has been spotty at best, goaltending has at least been the highlight, if not the best part of our team. And to just get rid of that, and then the backup's gone, and now you're just relying on AHL and European players coming in to try and be the best goalie on our team, you're just setting yourself up for 3 or 4 years of just hard news. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to move Gibson at this point. I get that, hey, we're wasting the best years. It's like, move him on to someone else. Buffalo is not going to really make him any better of a goalie. It's not going to make us any better of a team in the near future. And we'll see where everything shakes out 4 years from now. But you're basically dooming both teams at that point.
Yeah, I think honestly the only thing keeping the Ducks from being, and they're pretty close already, but from being a Ottawa Senators or Detroit Red Wings right now is John Gibson. That's the only difference I see really between these two teams, right? It's a lot of young players on both teams. There's a lot of kind of aging veterans who aren't producing. There's some pretty good players, when you look at Dylan Larkin and Anthony Mantha on Detroit and, Drake Batherson, and obviously they just brought in Tim Stutzel on Ottawa. There's some decent players sprinkled throughout the lineup, but both those teams have crap goaltending. Now, Matt Murray got shelled for 7 by the Oilers tonight, and a couple nights ago got shelled by 5. And got taken out in the first period by, I think it was the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, you go over and you look at Detroit, and it's Bernier who's still there. And he's their starting netminder because Jimmy Howard has moved on now. That's the one
retired,
thing.
Retired, I think, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that's the one thing keeping the Ducks from being that right now is John Gibson. So if you move John Gibson to anywhere, even Buffalo or whatever, you are now resigning yourself to basically be that team for the next couple of years. until you can and bring in some assets. And I think the one important point you brought up there is how privileged we've been as an organization to continually go through starting netminder after starting netminder after starting netminder. We've never really been in a period where a lot of teams have been in where the one piece they are away from being a good team is a goaltender, right? And you know, we've always really had a strong goaltender, when it was from Brizgalov to Brizgalov.
there's Hiller, there's
Jaguar to Hiller to Freddie to Gibson, and you know, the list goes on, right? But you've had some pretty good years over the last little bit here where we've had a goaltender, at least a capable NHL goaltender, if not a top quality starting goaltender. And
usually we're fighting over two guys. And even, you know, to this this point, I think Miller is a capable starting goalie. I wouldn't put him at, you know, Gibson's level. And I don't think he could sustain it, you know, playing top minutes, you know, being the number one goalie. But he's not, I don't really think he's an option next year. And if he's gone and you've traded off Gibson, there's not a lot in the pipeline at this point. So either you go have to overpay probably in the offseason for a goalie. And like, what was it, two years ago? It was the goalie. Everyone was just like, all right, whatever goalie we can grab and pay, we do. And these guys are already gone. So, I mean, it's rough. You can find a, you know, a diamond in the rough. But, I mean, at this point, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can say, oh, Gibson, you know, he looks like he doesn't care anymore. It's like, look at that, look at the team in front of him. I'd be fucking frustrated too. I won't want to play.
He gets the brunt of this every game, you know, that he's in there. The Ducks get shelled for four or five goals, and really not many of them are his fault, but he gets the most impacted by it. You know, when you look at the stat line at the end of the night, he's not happy looking at that, guaranteed, right? It's just not.
You don't see the lead up and the actual things that happen. You're like, know, because if you look at the stats, it's like, oh, that, you know, it was a shot from an extreme angle. It was shot and was, you know, hit off Hockeybot shoots it in off the post and in, or just inside. And you look at it and you go like, wow, all right, why didn't Gibby stop that? And it's just, it's people who don't understand the lead up to the goal and the goals that go in. And Gibby's not a bad goalie. Sometimes he gets really stuck with how the way the Ducks are playing. And, you know, it's like, count your blessings. You got that goalie in net that just, you know, hasn't completely sold it. You know, just I'm out. It's like, all right, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And I can't wait till this contract's over and I'm moving on.
You know? I think the only way you could entertain trading Gibson, I think there's only two ways that two scenarios that it could happen. John Gibson asks for a trade and you feel like you have to move him. I guess it'd be three. So he asks for a trade. You just get an unbelievable offer. You just can't refuse. Just a ridiculous offer, whatever that may be. And it's hard to really judge how much a player like John Gibson is worth, because you don't really see starting netminders of the quality of John Gibson get moved too often. Right.
They don't get traded. They sign. You see what they do and they go, okay, that guy could help our team. But you don't go like, well, what's he doing right now? And do we trade? I mean, because you would trade in season, and if you trade mostly in season, you're hoping that he's going to be your ace. So unless there's a major injury to somebody, that's about the only time I could see an overpayment. Well, but usually that's a desperate team.
Freddie got traded, but he was a UFA, right, coming up. And he got a first and a second round pick for him. And obviously the price for John Gibson, I think, would be astronomically higher than that, based on, you know, just the play that, you know, he's sustained over the last couple of years. And obviously the numbers aren't great. But I think, you know, if you ask anybody around the league, John Gibson is a top netminder in this league. And you put him in a good team and he's going to do good things. The last one there is I don't think you necessarily have to be worried about, you know, not having a netminder for this year or next year. I think in any trade, like even if it was Buffalo, you would assume Carter Hutton or Linus Ullmark is coming back in that deal. Probably Carter Hutton to just offset some of the salary, because Hutton makes about 2.5 for the rest of this year. So I don't think you worry so much about not having a NHL quality netminder this year. It's about having that apparent successor right behind him. And I don't think we're at a point where we can say Lucas Dostal is anywhere close to being ready to be that. He had a great six-game start in the AHL where he was just unstoppable. The last five games for Lucas Dostal, not been great. And it's been a tough adjustment for him. So of course there was a ton of hype for him at the beginning. I think there still is there. You're still, you know, able to have that hype around him because I still think he's going to be a great netminder in this league. But you're not at that point you're at when you traded Freddie Anderson, where John Gibson and Anderson were fighting for the number one job. If Dostal's doing that next year, or, you know, if you have somebody who comes in and can do that, and then you feel comfortable moving John Gibson because you can push this other guy into the starting job, you know, as Nete in the chat has been mentioning, if the Ducks get another first-round pick and take the Swedish goaltender Wallstat in the draft this year, and you've got Dostal and Wallstat in the pipeline, maybe then you look at moving John Gibson because you've got the pieces there. But so many things kind of have to go right. Or have to kind of fall into place for you, for me, you know, to feel comfortable moving a player like that, unless you just get a ridiculous offer from a team, which I don't think many teams have kind of the capability of pulling that off. When you look at, we're talking about a first round pick and an A-level prospect for Rickard Rakell. Imagine what the type of deal would be for a player like John Gibson.
If you trade John Gibson, you are committing yourself to a rebuild for 3 to 4 years. Now, if that is your mindset and you think that's where the team needs to be, that's fine. I just don't think Dostal is 2 or 3 seasons out. I also don't think whoever you get as a prospect, as good as a goalie as he might be, give me your Spencer Knights. I just still don't think in 2 to 3 years this team with that person in net is going to be something that makes the Ducks all of a sudden competitive for losing Gibson. Gibson gives you at least a competitive window for a little bit. The second you get rid of him, you're done. You've committed to that complete rebuild. Now, if that's your prerogative and that's where you want to go with it, or you think the team should go that way, then fine. But I just don't see management thinking that unless they are getting grossly overpaid and go like, listen, what we're getting is going to make our window in 3 to 4 years like a 10-year window or an 8-year window or whatever that window is going to be ultra competitive. So I just, yeah. I have a real hard time seeing how they just, and especially like you mentioned that with Freddie going, that was a decision by Bob Murray. He said, listen, we've got two choices. Who are we going to go with? I'm 100% on Gibson. Freddie is a guy I'm trading. No matter what, this is my guy who's going to propel this team. Now, things didn't go, obviously, according to plan, but it'd be really hard for him to go like, well, I got rid of that guy, and I'm going to get rid of this guy now, and I really don't have a plan. So once my 10 years over, I've left my team with just crap goaltending, even though I had two number ones, you know, two top 10 goalies in the league. So
yeah, and I think the toughest thing too is, you know, a few people brought up in the chat here, you know, rely on Dostal, draft a goaltender, and allow yourself to trade John Gibson. I think the hardest prospects to predict in terms of future success are goaltending prospects. They take longer.
Quickly it happens too. Yeah. It takes a while. You just get coming and being a stud. I mean, you even saw Carter Hart, where, you know, it was a whole bunch of hype between him, and he's floundered a little bit recently. So it just, goaltending takes longer because it takes experience. It takes seeing plays happen, and the NHL is ever changing, and it's extra quick right now, which the goalies are in a section of time where they have to adapt to what players are doing. It's this back and forth where players get really good, and then the goalies figure out what they need to do or how they need to play to be better. And then all of a sudden the players start figuring out how they need to beat goalies. So we're kind of in that other sway of things. So it's hard to find a good goalie nowadays. And you know, so it's, if you got a good one, yeah, hang on to it, because they're hard. Yeah. They're going to be hard to find moving forward.
Yeah, and like you said, I think the trading Gibson and extending the rebuild by 4 or 5 years is valid because of that, right? Where, you know, Lucas Dostal is maybe 2 or 3 years away from being, I think, an NHL starting netminder, where you can comfortably say that, right? Like a starter. You know, trading John Gibson means now you have to wait the 2 or 3 years for this guy to be a starter before you have a starting netminder again. And I also don't think you make draft decisions based on guys you want to move. I wouldn't be a proponent to getting another first round pick, taking a goaltender, just because then you're going to move John Gibson. You know, I don't think that's a smart organizational move by any means, because now you've handcuffed yourself into having to move John Gibson because you've drafted this guy. And you kind of you wrap yourself into a Florida Panthers type situation where they've signed Sergei Bobrovsky for 10 years, drafted yeah. Spencer Knight, and it none of it makes sense.
Now you can't move Bobrovsky.
Yeah, it doesn't make too much sense in that sense. And you know, obviously you can't move Bobrovsky, and I think you would still always be able to move John Gibson because he makes a full $4 million less than Sergei Bobrovsky yep. does. But it's just not a way you want to kind of make your decisions, I think, on the draft or in trades. You know, you don't want a player, you know, to go into the draft saying, we're going to draft this guy because we're going to trade this guy, or we're going to trade this guy because we're going to draft this guy. It's just not the way I think you want to gamble on any of those, you know, whether the draft or making trades. And I think for John Gibson's case, I think he's relatively safe. You know, like I said, unless the Ducks get an unreal offer or he asks for a trade, I think those are really the only two scenarios we see him leaving right now. Obviously, you know, this article mentioned that the Sabres reached out twice on his availability, and the Ducks said, nope, it's not available. So, you know, as bad as things are getting, that was early in the season when it was bad for the Ducks, and it's still bad. I don't see how it gets much worse where the Ducks are like, yeah, I guess we got to trade him now. Like it really can't get much worse than this, right? So
yeah, and I don't know how teams would start overpaying for goalies if they've started to look at goalies that have produced versus what they would they do now. It's like you signed your Holtby, you signed your Bobrovsky. It's just the goaltending of old doesn't necessarily work so much, and I think GMs would be way more hesitant now. It seems like just the random younger goalies kind of kick in and no one's got a book on them. Just look at the goalie who beat us just tonight. It's like, dude hasn't played in 5 years. There's his third NHL game and he only gave up one goal. So I think right now GMs aren't really willing to risk too much on a goalie that, even though, you know, as Gibson's pedigree is there. I would just think GMs are a little bit more hesitant to give up too much because they don't exactly know if getting that goalie is going to translate to their team. It's weird. Goalies have to be in a certain zone to work really well. I don't know. It's a hard thing to explain, but if you take a goalie that's been playing really well in one system and then you go, wow, look, he's really, really good. Let's, you know, he's free agent. Let's sign him. He goes in and Bobrovsky, all of a sudden things just start going south and it's different. The defense plays different in front of you and doesn't necessarily play to your strength. So it's a big gamble for GMs to want to trade a lot for a goalie if they don't know it's going to work out.
It feels weird to be talking about trades in March because usually by this time, by the end of February, we're done.
Yeah.
The trade deadline's already passed. And
we're good to go. Yeah, we do.
But we're still almost a full month away. I think the trade deadline's on April 14th this year, I believe. And we're, you know, basically a full month away from that happening. So, you know, these discussions are only going to ramp up there. Last thing I want to cover on the show before we wrap things up for today is I don't want to say coaching changes because it really didn't affect the Ducks coaching staff per se, but Daryl Sutter leaves as a special advisor to become the head coach
Daryl.
Of the Calgary Flames, which, you know, makes sense for him. It's where he's from. It's where, you know, he's been living when not working. It's where his family's from. You know, if he was going to ever take a coaching job, I think there was an article that said the only places he was going to go would be Calgary and Chicago. I'm not sure how Chicago works into that other than
they both begin with the letter C.
Yeah. And it being maybe a little bit closer to Canada than obviously Anaheim is. But if you're picking Calgary, would you not also think Edmonton would be on that list as well? And I don't know if that has anything to do with his affiliations with the Flames or not, but I digress anyway. There was a rumor that had came out and has been since debunked that the Ducks were considering offering and had offered the coaching job to fire Dallas Eakins and hire Daryl Sutter. I think that got debunked pretty quickly, but it does play into kind of the coaching rumors right now where apparently and obviously Dallas Eakins is on the hot seat. You know, Travis Green in Vancouver is on the hot seat too, and he was a guy in the past that the Ducks were looking to hire and bring in before he signed with the Vancouver Canucks, and obviously Daryl Sutter's name being out there for a little bit sparked some rumors because he had connections with the Ducks organization that he could go there. You know, when we look at Eakins, I don't think he gets fired, but before the end of the season. But, you know, out of Sutter and Green and some of the other names out there, are those some guys you would even consider taking over the coaching job from Dallas Eakins at this point?
Nope, for a couple of reasons. Travis Green, I think, was in the running for a little while. And, yeah, I think even at one point I was kind of hopeful. This is back when I think they were talking about Randy Carlyle and, you know, he was in it and Travis yeah. Green was a possibility. I was like, I'd rather do Travis Green. But once again, he's not proven. He's done, you know, a little bit in Vancouver, but hell, Dallas Eakins did a little bit in Edmonton, didn't do very well, hasn't done very well here. I don't think taking a coach that's had no success on a team that's not having success and making it successful is an actual opportunity to make it work. As far as Daryl Sutter, he's a dinosaur in my book. He can be hard-nosed as he wants to be. I don't know if he's actually going to make Calgary any better. I did find it funny, though, with the NHL and ESPN kind of coming together. I don't know if you saw that tweet where the last game ESPN ever broadcast was the 2004 Stanley Cup Finals against the Lightning and Calgary yep. Flames, where Daryl Sutter was the coach of the Calgary Flames, and now ESPN is going to start it, and he's still going to be the coach. Going to be the coach of the Calgary Flames. That's kind of funny. But, Dallas Eakins is here because Bob Murray's still here, and Bob Murray won't be here after this season. And it's up to the new GM, I guess, at that point, if he has enough confidence in Dallas Eakins to give him another year or just bring in his own guy. I mean, ultimately, I feel like it's just going to come down to how the draft, the expansion draft, and the new GM feels about the situation. I don't think Travis Green's going to be in there because I think there's a lot better candidates moving forward. So we'll see what happens. But, I mean, even Seattle needs to get a new coach at some point. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think where those Daryl Sutter to Anaheim rumors came from is I think it was Eric Stevens who put out a recent article where they talked about Daryl Sutter leaving and going to the Calgary Flames, is that apparently the Ducks were working up to offering Daryl Sutter a assistant coach job. Right now he was special advisor. They wanted a veteran guy in the dugout or in the bench beside Dallas Eakins and kind of to be able to guide him. And he said it's something they've been looking for. It's something they want to do. But for some reason, because of the pandemic, they couldn't. And I think in Sutter's case, it's because you know, he wanted to be closer to his family. He doesn't really want to travel that much. Calgary makes, obvious sense for him to go back and coach there. I don't see the reason why this is a focus for Bob Murray right now in what is presumably his last year as general manager and could be, you know, the last year for Dallas Eakins as head coach of the Anaheim Ducks. Like you said, a new GM comes in. Dallas Eakins has just as much chance as anybody else to be head coach of the Ducks at that point. You know, why are you concerning yourself bringing a veteran presence to sit beside Dallas Eakins on the bench? Is that not essentially what Dale Sutter was already as a special advisor and the point behind that? So I think that's where those rumors came from. But when you're looking at successors for Dallas Eakins at this point, you know, there's a free agent out there in Gerard Gallant right now who I think is the best option out of any of those guys. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes to resume and pedigree and what he's done in the past with young teams like the Florida Panthers and the Vegas Golden Knights, he would be at the top of my list of anybody. Even if Travis Green comes available, you know, Daryl Sutter was never a guy I would have wanted in there. He would have felt like a typical Bob Murray hire. I think that would have been the closest
him thing. Bruce Boudreau again.
Yeah. Well, when you look at names that are out there right now, outside of, you know, maybe some younger coaches in the AHL or whatnot, but in terms of resume and pedigree and their previous success, Gerard Gallant is
100%. It sucked because I've really actually once it sucked because I don't want to say sucked because I mean I was hopeful that Dallas Eakins would get that chance and you know run with it and be successful because I mean we all wanted that, but it was like 2 or 3 months later Vegas fired Gallant. Well, crap, we could have got Gallant. We just waited, but there's no way you could just do Dallas Dallas dirty like that, I guess. It was just, you know, damn it. All right, well, we picked our dance partner, and we're going to kind of stick with it. But, I mean, if Gallant is still there, and obviously the season is what it is, I don't think Dallas Eakin is going to really change much, even if some miracle scenario for Bob Murray happens, where Bob Murray is still the GM. I would think he probably cut ties with Dallas Eakin if Gallant is still there, because Gallant's got to be the best pick. I mean, he's, speaking of being done dirty, he's been done dirty by two teams now. It doesn't make sense. This dude is going to win his Stanley Cup. He's just got to get a team to just stick with him.
Yeah, and he has a history of coming into young teams and doing well. I think that's the big thing, right, is he's not like a coach that has to go into an already built team and then take them to another level. He takes kind of young, underperforming teams and brings them to another level and you know, gets them to a point where they
can... confidence, you know, you get Carolina confidence, Vegas confidence. I mean, he's just...
He feels like a perfect fit.
Yeah.
For the Ducks. And I think, you know, to wrap things up here, like the saving grace and the light at the end of the tunnel for Ducks fans this year is that presumably there'll be at least one big roster change or management change, sorry, at the end of the season here when Bob Murray's contract expires. So, you know, you got to slog through it a little bit here to get to the end of the season and out of the expansion draft. And then likely Bob Murray is gone and a new general manager comes in. And then from there, you might see another big change when the new GM comes in and makes his decision on the coaching staff, which... Dallas Eakins doesn't have a glowing resume right now when you look at the last couple seasons and especially this year in appealing to a new general manager. And I'm not sure he'd get glowing reviews necessarily from the players either. I think a lot of people in the organization, especially the players, are looking for a new voice, and that starts general manager down. And sometimes it's just better to wipe the slate clean, which we might see this summer. So, you know, we've got 23, 24 games to slog through here before we can get to that point. But, you know, it feels different this year because at least you know there is at least one big change coming at the organizational level, potentially too, and that we can finally see some fresh faces, a new direction, you know, a new injection of management staff into this organization. And so hopefully that's something that we can look forward to for this offseason, along with another top five pick potentially as well in the draft. So that pretty much wraps it up for today, unless you got another thing you want to end on here, Jay.
No, just touch on what you said. You know, new changes will be happening. So until then, we got 20 plus games. So as you need therapy, we all do. We all watch the games. Me, Eddie, Pat, Steven. We all get frustrated watching it, and we have to hop on and just release those feelings. So encourage everybody to get on. Go put in your comments, because we do read them. We do try and talk about them, and you're not alone. We are a family. We are a support group. We are here for therapy, and we will get through this and better days hopefully ahead.
Yeah, we appreciate you guys coming out too. Yeah. We all know it's a tough season to kind of, you know, deal with and go through right now. But, you know, that's why we like doing these post game shows. We could interact with a lot of you live after the game and kind of go through things. And then for everybody, you know, who listens after the fact, we appreciate that too. And again, apologize for some of the last two shows. I appreciate everybody who did reach out just to make sure that we were okay and that we were still doing shows and when our next show is going to get posted on Spotify. you know, I appreciate you guys reaching out. So, you know, we had some audio issues and we had some me issues. I fell asleep for the last one. So we'll be kind of hopefully a little bit more on schedule for the next upcoming shows here. I think we got a back-to-back Friday, Saturday this week against the Sharks to attend the weekend here. So as is always with the back-to-back games, we are only doing a show after the second game. So we will be back on Saturday night to break down the Sharks versus Ducks series. Hopefully some good games, at least if not a win or two sprinkled in there. But again, thanks.
You optimistic fuck you.
I gotta be a little bit optimistic.
All right, cool, I'll allow it.
But anyway, yeah, we appreciate you guys coming out. We'll be there for Saturday, and as people are saying, yes, Steven aka Sniffles will likely be on that show, so he'll be making his return to the podcast. But anyway, Yeah. Have a good night, guys, and we'll see you on Saturday night. Take care.
Bye, guys.